Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, we're going to be looking at the most and least competitive nations to play in Bold Action. We're going to be reviewing some of the tournaments we've been to and looking at some of the data from them, some of our opinions on what is currently the most and least competitive nation to play. Jumping in, the most recent competitive tournament we went to was Beachhead. We haven't really done a review of that, so do you want to give a brief summary of Beachhead for anyone who's interested for next year, Bill?
So Beachhead is, it sort of kicks off the calendar in the UK, certainly on the South Coast, in terms of two-day events. So it was a two-day event in Bournemouth as part of the Beachhead show run by Michael Smith, and Alex Bundock was also TOing this year with Michael. 44 players, which was fantastic. I think it's the biggest the highest number they've ever had at Beachhead. It's competitive, but also thematic. So you could take a generic platoon. You could also take theatre list if you wanted to. There was a theme, which was Last Stand. You were encouraged to go with that theme. And I think on the whole, quite a lot of people did.
Yeah, my Buffalo certainly took a Last Stand.
Yeah. Some more than others on this podcast. Yeah. And there were some big names there as well. It was the week after WTC. And we had a nice spread of, some of those sort of tournament players that you see a lot in the UK. A lot of people, obviously, locally to the south coast, the south of England as well. Yeah,
and it was a lot of fun, wasn't it? I've got to say a huge shout out to Mike and Alex because they ran a very smooth tournament.
It was 44 players. It was fantastic. It was brilliantly well run over the 2 days. Bit of an effort on behalf of the community in terms of bringing tables and helping and so on, get it set up. But once it was up and running, it was fantastic. Yeah,
I had a lot of fun. Looking at the data for Beachhead, though, in context of this episode, one of the things I did notice is of the 44 players, 10 of them took Brits and 14 took Germans.
Yeah.
And then all the other nations, it's between 1 and 4 per nation. So actually, that tells me two things. First of all, Brits and Germans are sort of the go-to sort of competitive and thematic choice, I would say, for tournaments in the UK. But also, when you have these sort of broader restrictions, it encourages people to bring a whole range of nations, because we saw, I think it was about 12 different nations represented across the 44 players.
Yeah, we have big shout out to Harry, who brought his Danes, which was amazing. And he posted that on Facebook beforehand, so we all got a chance to look at his display board and the models, which is brilliant. But yeah, fair play for bringing the Danes. They didn't finish bottom. They were, solidly at the top of the bottom third, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think 29th out of 44, which, I mean, all things considered, that's a good result for a Danish army.
Yeah. We had partisans represented. We had, a genuine New Zealand platoon, British platoon, but genuinely, geared towards New Zealand in that sense. There's quite a few Italian lists, Chinese. Yeah. And, we mentioned Germany and Britain, and then a smattering of US, Japan, Hungary. Yeah. It was a good representation, good spread.
Yeah, good spread. The problem from our perspective looking at it is because it's sort of generic and theatres, that makes it a little bit more difficult to analyze in terms of what is the most competitive. And then additionally, because most of the nations only had 1 to 4, really, I think the only two we can look at in comparison to each other are probably the Brits and the Germans, because they had enough players that sort of the final rankings were less dependent on sort of 1 to 2 players' ability to play that nation.
That said... And I think we saw this a little bit at the English Nationals as well last year, where there was the opportunity to take both theatre selectors and generic platoons. There are certain German theatre selectors that are very, very good. Looking here at the Western Desert theatre selectors and the Schützens, for example. And I know from the English Nationals that the German, or the players who took Germany as a nation who did well, took Western Desert themed lists. And we saw exactly the same at Beachhead, other than the person who came first, who did take a German list, but it wasn't a Western Desert list. But the other German lists that are in the top, 10, 12, 15, the three, that finished beyond the top player were all Western Desert themed ones, because you get the Schützen. In these cases, it was the ones where you can take the extra MG Kuba wagons as part of your armed car choices, so you get quite a decent dice count, all that kind of stuff. So I think with Germany, and it's not to take away from anybody who played Germany and did well at Beachhead, there's certain theatre selectors with Germany, when you start looking at the Western Desert, that do well, particularly when you can't replicate it in a generic platoon, because, for example, of the Schützen Squad, all the multiple armoured cars you can take in that single slot selection.
Yeah, but looking at the actual overall results, the British players finished with an average placing of 19.3, mm-hmm. and the Germans finished with an average placing of 21.5. So on average, the Germans were about two places behind. Mm-hmm. So I think we've demonstrated something there that was obvious to most players, that Britain is a slightly stronger nation than Germany in the game of bolt action.
On this weekend in February, on the South Coast in the UK. Yeah.
Well, I think it's something that you could probably demonstrate in most tournaments. I think if you've got a big enough sample, more than 20 players, let's say, your Brits generally will finish higher than your Germans.
Yeah, no, that I think that's a fair conclusion, yeah.
Sort of shout-outs to individual nations. Paul Wickens brought his Chinese and finished sixth,
mm-hmm. yep.
which shows sort of Chinese are capable of getting in the top 10. Obviously, we got someone who plays them quite a lot there and plays the game quite a lot, so quite a good player overall. But that shows they're capable of getting in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that's probably worth shouting out is the Partisans, mm-hmm. who got a sort of top quarter finish and a top half finish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, actually, I don't know if that is worth shouting out.
I think it is. And talking to the player beforehand, he was looking forward to beachhead because there wasn't a restriction on dice. Mm-hmm. So this player took his Partisans to warfare where there was a dice cap restriction.
Mm.
And the Partisans work well when you can maximize your dice count in order to be able to do what you need to do in that moment, maybe more so than other nations. So in this instance, because there wasn't that dice cap, the player who took them was looking forward to the fact that he could get it towards 18, 19, 20 or so dice.
The reason I was thinking it wasn't worth highlighting specifically is the two partisan nations finished 12th and 24th, so it doesn't really tell us much other than... What I was thinking is it shows that they can finish in the top half, which means with a little bit of growth, maybe it's a top 10 finish is possible there.
Mm-hmm.
The other notable thing is there were only two Soviet players, which is notable in itself because actually the Soviets are generally considered quite a strong nation.
Yeah.
And they both finished in the bottom half, so 27th and 40th, which is interesting. And it might be a trend we see at other competitive tournaments.
Yeah. And we only had three Japanese players as well, only one of which finished in the top half. One finished bang on halfway, one was in the top 10, and then one was below. So I did think we would see some more. US wasn't massively well represented either at beachhead, to be fair.
No, it wasn't. And I think it's probably because with the selectors being open, people wanted to lean into that.
Mm-hmm.
And the US have a lot of selectors, but most of them are quite generic. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot of sort of... There's not a lot of inspirational selectors with like weird quirky rules.
Mm.
Added to the fact that if you are leaning into the Last Dance theme, the US, just because they joined later in the war and sort of the war turns, there's probably less Last Dance with the US. So if you are leaning into the theme, I mean, there's still some.
Yeah.
But you're probably thinking more Pacific than anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Final thing of note from beachhead before we move on. Was there were three Italian players, but they all finished near the bottom of the table, which isn't something we saw at the other competitive tournaments we've been to recently.
No.
Especially because now with the old Case Blue rules, they're a bit of a formidable fighting force at times.
Now, I didn't see the list in their entirety and exactly, but I do know that of those three Italian players, they certainly all weren't rocking the Case Blue theatre selectors. So they were having to play with the theatre selector, the national rules relevant to the theatre selector they took. And the three players as well, knowing the names, they're not the most experienced of tournament players in the UK.
Yeah. And again, this is where only having a few players can really skew the data, because if you only have two or three players and they all lean into the theme,
mm-hmm.
or they all sort of come from the same club, or they all have a similar level of experience, they're all going to get a very similar result. And so... probably not a lot to take away from that. I just thought that was really interesting. Shall we move on to a couple of tournaments that are all out competitive, bring your worst, and see what nations did the best at them.
Yeah, so before we get into it, just a quick big thank you to Spurley from the Juggernauts for sending us the info and the data for WTC. Juggernauts did a series of episodes after WTC on debriefing, and one of which was all about their stats and data episodes, so do have a look at that as well. And then the other big shout out is to Russell Wright, the organizer and TO for WoW, who also sent us the data from that. So we got hold of the full breakdown of results for both WoW last year and WTC this year, which has definitely helped in terms of looking at some of what we're going to talk about in the next however many minutes.
Indeed. And before we go into it, if you are interested in playing for WoW Team England this year in October, do check out the qualifiers event page on Facebook, or you can email us directly and we'll give you all the information you need if you're interested in an international teams tournament. So I guess before we jump into the data, for anyone who hasn't been to both tournaments, it's probably worth highlighting the similarities and differences, because obviously that'll affect the data as we go through it. I think I'll talk through the format of WoW, and then if you talk through the format of WTC, hopefully that'll highlight the similarities and differences. So WoW is a three-person team event. It's six games over the 2 days. The way the rounds work is you're in a group of four teams day one. Each team plays every other team, so there's your three games. The winner of that group goes through to the first group on day two. The second place team in that group goes to group two. And so basically on the second day, there's three further games where you play three further teams, and then the winner of each group wins their group. And so if you win your group day one and you win your group day two, you win it all.
You win it all round.
Champions. Yeah. Whereas if you come second and then win your group day two, you win the sort of the group two trophy, as it were.
Yeah.
So it's really nice because everyone's got something to play for on the second day. And it's also quite nice because you know exactly who you're going to play beforehand. The lists are pre-published. And so it gives you the opportunity to do a bit of sort of theory hammer, where you think, who's going to be best against this one? Who's going to be best against this one? Because at this one, the captains place down lists and then pair up against. So the tables are all different as well. So Captain A, let's say, puts down a list on a table. Captain B then chooses who plays that. And so Captain B doesn't get to choose which table, but they get to choose the opponent for that list, basically. And then vice versa, you swap until all three pairings are done. And so you've got an interesting thing here where the captains get to sort of put a finger on the scales on both the pairings and the tables that are suitable to their players. And so if you've got loads of trucks, let's say, you can throw that truck list onto a road table, and vice versa. If it's a table with loads of trees that are going to get in the way of the trucks, you can put a foot slogging Japanese army on that table, which is one of the things that we found ourselves doing. Sometimes we were playing the tables rather than the opponents, I found.
Yeah, and you know, that's a valid tactic, because you had that ability to, you know, either decide if you're going to put your list down first on the table you want, but you have no say over who you're going to play, or do you hold that list back, let the opponent's captain put their list down, then you decide, right, the list that I want, I'm holding back, that's the list I'm going to put down against that one I've just been revealed. So, yeah.
Exactly. And because of that, there's a little bit more of a, if you are doing the ultimate competitive list, you probably want someone who's a bit of an all-comer list, where they can take on any nation, basically, on any table, because you might want to throw them down first so that they can take the hit of the opponent getting to choose, and then you get to choose your next pairing, ideally for you. And then, obviously, if you choose the next pairing, you've also kind of chosen the last pairing, because, obviously, there's only one list left each. And in that, we also submitted four lists, and then one of the lists gets dropped. Basically, the first time you play, the three armies you choose are the three lists that go through for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
And so that is something that we see at WTC as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and no repetition nation. So across your three players, you can only have one nation being represented once. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So what about WTC? How does that compare?
So similar. So teams of four, again, only one nation per player across the team of four. You submit five lists in advance. They get published in advance. And then on the day, on the morning, before your first game, you lock down your four lists. You weren't playing in a pooled environment. So unlike previous years at WTC, for this year, you knew who your first round opponent was, that the draw for the first round had been done in advance. And then after that, it was then Swiss, although the organisers did prevent you playing another team from the same country you were from until it mattered. You know, to round five, round six was when you started to see some of those blue on blues, for want of a better phrase. So in that sense, you had a bit of prep that you could do for the first round, but then you were kind of like in the lap of the gods almost for rounds two onwards. In terms of the pairings, so unlike in previous years at the WTC, for this year, you put your first list face down and then the opponent's captain put a list face down to play it. And then you repeated for the second, third and fourth matchups. Like previous years at the WTC, in that round, you're all playing along on the same table. So you've got, there was nine sets of tables, and then within each set, there were four identical tables. So everybody in that round is playing on the same table when those two countries are playing off in that round.
Yeah, and the same tables thing is quite interesting, that you're not getting to choose your opponent or the table, which means really it is sort of truly random. Mm-hmm. Because the teams are moving up and down in terms of if you win your game, you move up the rankings. If you lose, you go down. Mm. It means that your team and the team you're playing are generally paired based on similar ability.
Yes.
But within that team, obviously, there's an array of abilities. There's an array of armors.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're getting quite a nice random element here to test people's ability to play the game when they can't put their finger on the scales.
Yeah. The fact that you couldn't, through your captain, you couldn't choose the table you're playing on because they're all the same. Or you couldn't choose your opponent by putting down your list after the opponent's captain has chosen theirs. You were having to be flexible enough to be able to take on whatever was put in front of you, which, depending on how you did over the weekend, for some people worked very well, and for others, maybe not as well, because there were some pairings and matchups which heavily went one way rather than the other. So.
Yeah, and I think actually the way you build your list, if it is going to be truly random, probably should be slightly different in hindsight, where you should be building a sort of an all-comers list rather than a very specific niche list.
Mm. I think it's worth saying before we start talking about some of the data, WoW was single generic reinforced platoon, 1,100 points. Mm-hmm. WTC was double generic, although there were some units not allowed. Or put it the other way, it was double generic and there was a list of stuff that you could take. Mm-hmm. And that was 1,000 points. And that does matter because certain nations do better with the option to take two platoons rather than one. And there are some nations that are perfectly, decent as a single platoon at 1,000 points rather than being a double platoon at 1,000 points.
Yeah. And there are some that are a bit of a surprise that I thought would do well dual platoon 1,000 and actually did worse than I expected.
Okay.
There's one nation in particular that WTC didn't seem to do as well as most people were expecting.
Mm.
Should we jump into some data now then?
Yeah, go for it.
What we did was we took, because you've got all these players playing within teams, the final player's placing is a bit of an interesting thing because you might be capped in your placing, or you might end up first because you are the best in your team. And so your team are always playing the bottom teams. And so you're always getting an easy game compared to your usual level you'd be playing at.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might overperform. And so what we did, instead of looking at the placings of the individuals, is we ranked each nation within its team. And so basically each nation gets a ranking between 1 and 4, depending on whether it was the best in the team or the worse than their team.
Yeah.
And then we basically average that ranking across the nations to work out, because let's say, for example, the Brits are the very best nation you could always play in bolt action. Mm-hmm. They would have an average placing of 1 in their team because they basically, the person who brought the Brits would be winning the most games effectively.
If that hypothesis was the case, ignoring player ability, dice, temperature, time of day, your middle name, and so on.
Exactly. And what's quite nice at the WTC is because you've got, is it 18 teams of 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got 18 teams of 4, so that's 36, 72 players. So that's 72 players playing 6 games each.
Mm.
So 432 games are being played. That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
And then also that random element, it should be slightly less biased data, which means that actually, although as much as anything can be, sort of unbiased, and obviously we're not statisticians here, and this isn't going to be a maths podcast.
Can you tell?
But just because of the number, it does give a little bit more credence to this data than, so like, I don't know, say you're playing a 10-person tournament with three games.
Yeah.
Like, you could get lucky and come first just because you keep rolling a six.
In summary, with 72 players playing six games over the weekend, the data set is a lot bigger and therefore more significant and more robust than your 10-person, three-game, single-day event. Yeah.
So, Phil, all of that said, on average, which nation came highest in their team?
I mean, surely it's going to be Brits and Soviets because they are the two strongest nations after all.
Well, maybe it's Japanese.
And Japanese, yeah.
Yeah. So was it?
No. So, interestingly, when you took all of the nations played across the four players, across the 16 teams, the German came out as the strongest nation.
Yeah, they just pipped the Brits at the post, though, didn't they?
So their average was 2.125. So one being the best you could get, four being the worst. Brits got 2.143. But that when we actually did the data and looked at it, my flippant response earlier of, well, clearly it's going to be the Brits and the Soviets. We went, oh, hang on a moment. Actually, the Germans did very, very well as a nation in bolt action on that weekend in Granada. Surprisingly so.
And diving down to sort of like the individual results, the Brits mainly finished second in their team.
Yes.
So of the teams, teams that we've got data for here, three Brits finished first in their team, eight finished second, and then you had one third, two second, two last. And the Germans actually have a very similar sort of layout, but because there's less of them in second, they just skew towards. So of the eight German players we've got here, two of them finished first, four of them finished second, and then one for the last two places. And so very similar sort of set of results where they weren't guaranteed to be best in their team, but they were guaranteed to finish in the top two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not guaranteed, but they had a very strong chance of finishing in the top two in their team, which goes to show that actually they're both very competent forces.
Mm-hmm.
But because we see the competitive players play Germany slightly less, it does make you wonder if the Germans could actually be even better.
If some of those more competitive players picked up the mantle and really pushed on with the Germans? Yeah, potentially, yeah. Yeah.
Equally, it may be the inverse, where we've got some British players who aren't usually British players and have adopted the Brits for the competitive environment because they know that they're a really good competitive nation.
Choice, yeah.
And so, but equally, though, because they're so close, it shows you that actually there's probably less in it than you would imagine.
Yeah, certainly you are. You know, if you listen to the noise and the chatter out there, you put someone straw poll kind of thing, put someone on the spot, people are going to turn around and go, Brits, Soviets. And then it's like, well, Japanese maybe, US maybe, you know, Italians rising stars. You don't hear Germany being mentioned, you know, in that same breath as the first sort of three, four nations we just mentioned. So
no. And I think also not being able to choose your opponent here has probably helped quite a bit. And because if you do get paired Germans against Brits, the Germans aren't planning to get close to you, Gurkhas. You've got the same tricks. You've got the same sort of big Dacker tank.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the Brits were allowed a multi-launcher. The Germans have the same option.
Mm.
You're playing very similar nations against each other. And really, the only disadvantage for the Germans is the fact they haven't got the free unit.
Yeah, and when they don't have an out-and-out assault unit in the way that the Brits do, obviously the Japanese do, you can have, you know, tasty fanatics in Italians, you can have some pretty tasty Soviet assault units and so on. So they don't have a sort of like an out-and-out assault unit like other nations do, to be fair.
But I think that's helpful if you Brits and Germans face off, because I think challenging them in close quarters is the last thing you want to be doing, really. And so, the fact that you haven't wasted points on a close quarters unit
means
you've spent the points on more long-range stuff, which means your Gurkhas have a harder time getting in.
Yeah, I know my highly scientific survey of me, of the two British players, or the two players playing Brits that I played, in both games, neither me or my opponent wanted to get in close and have a Gurkha off, you know, because that's the last thing you want to do, absolutely. So
it's just a great way to allow chance to decide the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you mentioned the Soviets, so surely the Soviets must be third then.
No. Nor fourth.
Nor fourth. Well, go on then. Who is your third choice? If you're building your team based purely on this one event,
yeah,
this one set of analysis. A
snapshot from Granada in February.
And you've got all your players are generic players. They don't have any preference.
Yeah, they can pick up whatever army they want. Yeah, yeah.
So who should my third choice be? I'm going to take Brits, Germans.
Yeah, USA.
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 Nice.
USA.
And that makes sense to me because with me saying before, there might be some Brit players who've just picked up the Brits.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this is by any disrespect to players of USA because I am a player of
USA. Indeed. Yeah.
But they are probably one of the easiest nations to pick up and play well quickly.
Yeah.
Because they're very forgiving. Because yeah, yeah. If you misposition that squad, not a problem, just fire and maneuver them back into where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you've got the other sort of quirks, like, say you put something in reserve that actually you think, well, that was a risky decision.
It doesn't matter. You don't get your minus one.
Exactly. Yeah. Just, you've got a few rules that are just, a lot of the US national characteristics and sort of choices are very sort of forgiving choices rather than being truly offensive. And so it means you can sort of hold your own, even if you're not that experienced playing them.
So this episode has become the easiest nation to play in bolt action rather than the most competitive nation. You heard it here first.
The two aren't mutually exclusive, though, are they?
No. So yeah, USA, absolutely solid choice. And I think if you're going to an event where you've got a three-person, four-person event as a team, you are going to think about, you don't want four nations and four players who are going to absolutely go and try and smash it every single round and therefore run the risk of actually coming up short. Mm. There does need to be an element of some solid dependability and so on. US lists, generally speaking, are not, you know, they're not all flash, are they? You know, they're fairly solid. They're fairly reliable, dependable. They don't do anything particularly well other than, you know, fire and maneuver. And they got a decent amount of choices for units, not a huge amount. You can take some things that have not massively overcosted, but there's no standout unit in the US roster where there, you know, whereas there is in, you know, if the Brits, for example, and, or you've got a national characteristic like fanatics for the Japanese, which is very, very powerful. US doesn't have that necessarily.
The thing that makes them a good counter as well, in the same way the Germans are a good counter, is they do have a lot of the same tricks.
Yeah.
And so they can take that Stuart as well. Yeah. And actually they can one up your British Stuart by being recce. And so they can rush around the corner at the end of a turn. And then if they don't get the first dice, they can rush back.
Hmm.
And then they've still got the multi-launcher option. And it is just a bit like what we're saying about the Germans. It's probably their infantry choices where you have to be a little bit more thoughtful.
Hmm.
Or imaginative might be a better word.
Mm-hmm. Or just accept that you have a restricted roster to choose from. Unlike, you know, other nations where, you know, Soviets, for example, where if you can imagine it, you can probably take it as an infantry unit. Yeah, there's some permutation out there that you can do. So
yeah, the US ones tend to be good at a single thing. So whereas your Gurkhas are good at both holding objectives and pushing into someone's face, the US ones tend to have like one quirk that they're good at, so they can have a stubborn unit, but it's not especially good in close quarters. They can have a shooter unit, but it's not that survivable. They can have, and so like the Rangers, for example, are great at rushing forward, but they don't have a lot of combat ability, and so that might not be the best decision for them. And so there is a level of sort of building on the US where you can take them from your sort of your safe pair of hands to a more risky force, but with sort of those elements that you have to know how to play properly.
Mm-hmm. What I thought was interesting, when you look at where the US players finished in their team mm-hmm. over the six games, so there were 13, we don't have the data for the French team, so this is out of 15 rather than 16, but there were 13 out of 15 teams who took USA lists, and they finished 4-3-3-3. So a nice even spread from first to fourth. You compare that to the Brits, where there were 14 out of 15 players playing British, and they finished three in first place, eight in second place, one and two. Germany was two in first, four in second, and one and one. So with the USA, it was a 4-3-3-3 split across first to fourth for those 13 players that took the US to Granada.
And they weren't that far behind the Brits off the back of that data. So the Brits are finishing on average 2.14,
yeah.
And the Americans are finishing 2.38. So
yeah.
In terms of placings, they're still in that second placing generally in your list on average.
Mm-hmm.
From there, though, so I'm saying that if I'm going to a four-person tournament, I'm going to bring Brits, I'm going to bring Germans, I'm going to bring USA. It's got to be, I mean, you've ruled out the Soviets, so I'm guessing it's got to be the Japanese then.
So I think this is the point where it's sort of down to, obviously, you know, it's always down to, but I think you absolutely have a bit of a free rein. When you get into a four-person event, and if you look at some of the individuals who did well with in terms of their overall placings and the nations they took, and you look at, you know, that who that fourth or what that fourth country was in each team, you've got Italy doing very well. You've got Poland doing very well. You've got, you know, Chinese doing, you know, doing decent amounts of work. You've got French doing well. Netherlands doing phenomenally well. The one that, you know, Netherlands player, shout out to Felix, and recently put on Facebook a link to Reddit where he'd written up his Dutch adventure, which is really, really interesting. So there are some really strong performances from nations that, you know, are only appearing in ones and twos, but the players are comfortable playing them and doing well at them.
Yeah, so this comes back to what we're saying at Beachhead, where because you're only sort of one to three of each of these nations, it's going to come down to the individual players rather than the nation in terms of how well they do.
Mm.
So Italy, for example, we had one player come second in the team and two players come third in the team, which gives them a nice sort of 2 2/3 finish, effectively. But if we tie all those minors together, so if you put all the minors, including Italy, together in a big pot, there's 10 players there, which is more than the Germans. There was only 8 German players, and they actually finished with an average of 2.5. We've got sort of Brits 2.15, Germans 2.125, US 2.38, and then if you've got a good player of a minor nation,
yes,
that might be a good one, especially if we do see a return to captain's pairing.
More of a pairing. Yeah.
You can use that as your sort of...
It's a bit of a wild card, isn't it?
Yeah, your loose cannon list, yeah. Where they might know how to play it, they might not. Mm. It might catch someone off guard. So choosing your fourth... If your fourth player plays a minor nation reasonably well, that might be a good shout.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't want to choose a minor... then who should you pick instead?
Again, based on one weekend in Granada in early February, are you going to pick Japan?
Yeah. So 8 players, like with Germans.
Yeah.
But an overall finish of 2.6.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit behind. But I mean, still in that second slot, generally on average.
Yeah.
What's funny, though, is none of them actually finished in the second slot.
No, it was either first or... Third and fourth. So, which does sort of leave the elephant in the room, which is the Soviets. And I get, you know, elephant in the room, maybe it's a strong phrase to use, but over the weekend, when you look at the data, they really didn't do very well as a nation in bolt action. You had two players who finished first in their countries, their teams with Soviets. You had one who finished second out of the four, and then the rest were in third and fourth place. And that really surprised me. And if you look down, if you look on the Juggernauts episode and you look down the individual player rankings, and they shared it on Facebook as well, you're not seeing Soviets, you know, there's really not many at all appearing in the top 20 of player performances.
No. And it's an interesting one because the sort of the subjective reasoning that we gave for, well, that I gave for the Germans and the US being strong, that they can also play the same tricks as the Brits.
Mm.
The Soviets can play a lot of those tricks as well.
Yeah. Like,
they've got access to those Stuarts. They've got access to multi-launchers.
They've access to pretty much anything they want.
They don't have the multi-launcher that isn't the M30.
As an artillery piece, yes.
As an artillery piece.
Yeah.
And you're not going to take a Katyusha, I don't think, unless you're really leaning into that sort of like high risk list, because you're going to take a Stuart, aren't you? And so maybe that means you can't split your enemy up as much because you haven't got the consistent multi-launching. I think it's probably, it's one that's less forgiving to play. And I think if you can't choose your opponent and you're having to come up against like random luck of the draw opponents, I do wonder if the Soviets don't do well in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting thought.
I mean, I don't play Soviets yet.
No, yet.
And so,
watch your space.
And so I can't really give any analysis on how they play against specific nations. I have played against them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
They've got enough toys, and especially because they can really game the dice count.
Yes, yeah. Along with, you know, Japan being another good example, you are going to see high dice counts for Soviets and Japanese if you build them in certain ways. Yeah.
Yeah, and with it only being 1,000, getting the free unit is like a 10% boost almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, any nation can get a high dice count, but generally speaking, at a competitive event, you don't see high dice count Brits because you're taking Gurkhas, which are expensive. But you are going to see high dice count, say, Japanese and Soviet lists, because you are taking cheaper units because of lower experience values.
And I do wonder, before we look at the WoW date, I do wonder if the dual platoon versus single platoon is a factor, because, as you say, anyone can take high dice counts.
Yeah, yeah.
A dual platoon.
Yes.
When it's single platoon, it's much more difficult to take a high dice count list where most of your dice are effective fighting units.
Yeah, without sticking in a load of cheap transports and all that kind of stuff. And we'll see this with the WoW, won't you? You know,
yeah.
As soon as you can start taking 3-for-1 choices in one slot, you can start pumping up the numbers in terms of your dice count.
Yeah, yeah, because really, when you play something like the US, let's say, single platoon, once you get to about 16 dice, for most people, they've taken all of the sort of the offensive stuff they want.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they're starting to fill points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you've got Japanese or Soviets where your anti-tank slot is 3 useful units, you can easily get to 20 before you start to think about filling points up.
Mm. Overall, reflections on what the data was suggesting from WTC, bearing in mind all the caveats.
Yeah, well, I think from the sort of the rough outline we saw from Beachhead, yeah, followed by the more specific data from WTC, I'd say Brits, for me, are an auto-include. Germans, I'd say now, are almost an auto-include. I think the only time I wouldn't bring Germans at a team event is if I didn't have a single player who played them, and then I probably wouldn't take the risk of bringing them.
Okay.
But if I knew someone who played them fairly frequently, I'd ask them to bring the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm thinking US as my third choice. And my fourth choice is either Japan or a strong minor. What about you?
So no Soviets?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not ruling them out, but if we just go from this alone, from Beachhead and WTC, it's very hard to justify bringing the Soviets.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. For me, what I really enjoyed looking at when we got hold of the data and was the slightly more exotic nations doing well as individuals and also doing well within their teams. You know, so you know, Topher's Poles, you know, best player, English player on England one, right up there in terms of, was he second overall? Joshua from USA 3 in terms of his 6 wins with his Japanese. Corey from USA 2 with his French list, which was awesome. You played him and I was on the table next to you. And as much as I was focusing on my game, I was also enjoying watching what was going on next, because it was a really cool list. It seemed like a really fun game as well. So it was really interesting to see these, you know, these more exotic, as I termed them, nations doing well at such a competitive level, both as the individuals, but then also doing well within their teams, because all those people we just mentioned were the best placed person in that team.
Yeah, I think those two that you've highlighted at the end there, the Polish-England A-team Topher's list, the Cavalry Polish, and the Cavalry French list that I played, Corey's list, they were good examples of that list that is a little bit peculiar, and so you got a good chance of catching someone off guard with it. And interestingly, on the Polish, the only other player of Poland came fourth in their team.
Mm.
And so I think that probably is a bit of a warning, sort of a warning asterisk there at the end, that yes, take a minor, but be aware that if you build it not quite right to the tournament, or the player isn't that familiar with it,
Or it just doesn't go well on the day.
Yeah. Then it could go the other way.
It can go the other way, yeah.
So this is why I think the minors are going to have to be very specific to each team rather than a universal piece of advice that this is the minor nation you should take to every tournament.
Yeah. I think what is really pleasing is there's very few teams across the 16 where it's, for example, Britain, Germany, Soviet, USA.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are seeing, you know, one, sometimes two of the nations picked being Italy, France, Poland, China, Japan, Netherlands, Romania, etc., rather than that sort of solid four you know, of Britain, Germany, Soviet, USA.
Brilliant. Shall we move into the World Up More Day and see if that is similar then?
Yeah.
So, interestingly, because there's only three choices here, we actually do see less variety.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
I think also because the other thing that led to that is a WTC, you've got a lot of duplicate teams. So, like, England brought three teams, Denmark brought two teams, Sweden brought two teams, etc. Yeah. It means your second team might be bringing more of a fun selection.
Yeah, true.
Whereas we had more limited numbers of teams.
Yeah, there was a greater spread of countries represented across the 16 teams. There were five countries that brought two teams.
Yeah, and importantly, no one brought a third team. Because often the third team is often sort of the people who are most recently into the game.
Yeah.
And are coming for the fun of it, bringing the fun that's just inspired them recently.
So
because of that, we see less variety in the nations. And so we had Brits, Germany, Japanese, Soviets, US, and we had one player bring Hungary.
Yeah. And I expect, saying this now in early March, when we get to October and we see the nations that are represented, you're going to see Italy. You're absolutely going to see Italy appearing. What it appears instead of will be really interesting in terms of across those, you know, the three nations that are going to appear more frequently from last year. Which one's going to drop? Or is it going to be some people will stop taking Brits, some will stop taking Germans, some will stop taking USA, Japan, in order for the Italians to appear. But you are going to see Italians, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be a mainstay, though. I don't think they're going to be in everyone's team. Mm-hmm. I think what they're going to be is they're going to be, if someone's just gotten into Italians now, and play them for the next 6 months, let's say, and they're feeling confident with them, they're going to go in. Or if someone like Owen, who went to the WTC, who always plays Italians, that kind of player will bring Italians.
Yes.
But I would put a bet on half, at most, having Italians would be my best.
I don't think it's going to be, you know, the major third choice, but I think you're going to see more than zero, which is what we saw previously. So it is worth pointing out, though, that Case Blue hadn't been released when WoW occurred. It was released the week after WoW. And obviously, at the point of submission, which was about a month or so before the actual event, Case Blue was merely a date in the horizon for a publisher and a marketing person, rather than something to get your sweaty hands on and start bringing your lovely new Italians with your new national lists.
Exactly. And so with the armies of national characteristics, there are very few players going to bring Italians seriously to a international competitive tournament.
Mm.
So jumping in, we did the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Average placing in team, because again, you've got people jumping around groups. It's the best way to do it. And this one, it's even hard to say where a player placed, because say you were in the third team in group one, is that better than the first team in group two, or vice versa?
On day two, yeah.
And so that gets all quite muddy. And so the average placing in team, so who's the auto-include then, Phil? Who's the team, who's the nation who on average came top of their team?
With 13... teams taking this nation, which I thought was interesting. That's why I paused unnecessarily long there, because it wasn't 16. With 13 teams taking this nation, it was the Brits. Of across the three players, seven of those British players finished first in their team, four finished second, and two finished third. So their score, if you like, was 1.62.
Yeah, which means on average, they're finishing first, possibly second, basically.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you're going to take Brits to a team event. Yeah. Okay, that's nice and clear.
What's interesting is back on top.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only interesting thing there, because I don't think anyone's surprised that the Brits are good.
Yeah.
But they're back on top compared to WTC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so second choice then, it must be Germans then, based on WTC.
So you saw a decent amount of Germans across the 16 teams. So there were eight players playing Germany across the 16 teams. But it's the Soviets. There were 12 people who took the Soviets. They finished five in first place, five in second place, two in third place. And their score was 1.75. So more second place than first place, but still very, very solid.
Yeah, so that is very different to the WTC finish, which I don't know what to take away from that. Maybe the... as I said earlier, the fingers on the scales, or maybe it's the single platoon. It's certainly, a big difference, which means that Soviets might be back on the menu.
Maybe.
Well, let's see how far behind was the next.
So quite a significant way behind, you know, half a score is Germany, mm-hmm. 2.25, with 8 players, so decent representation. 50% of teams took a German list. You had 2 finishing first, 2 finishing second, and 4 finishing third. So tended to be the lower of the three in you know, for each team.
Yeah, most of those Germans are finishing last in their team. Well, half those Germans half are finishing Germans, last in their team.
Yeah, yeah.
And so not looking very convincing on this one.
Yeah.
But again, you've down to the single platoon. Mm-hmm. You have increased the points slightly to 1,100 this time.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, what effect might that have had on the Germans compared to the dual platoon single?
I think Germans, I would have thought that Germans would do well at a higher points cost as a single platoon, because German units can cost a lot more than the equivalent in other nations, not the equivalent, but in the options you get in other nations. By restricting it to a single platoon rather than dual, you're not going to go up against 2 Dakar tanks and 2 armored cars, for example. So the Germans can maybe afford to spend a bit more points on the units that they've got available to them, knowing that they're not going to come up against duplicates because it's only a single platoon format.
Yeah. I mean, what the Germans don't do well is the MSU style, the minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple small units.
The multiple small units list. And so I do wonder, because when you've got single, what you end up doing with the Germans is you may end up having to spend points upgrading squads who are already reasonably effective.
Yeah, yeah.
The points you're spending doesn't make them significantly more effective. And so those points really aren't efficiently spent. Whereas if you are Soviets and you can spend those points on an extra unit, another bomb dog or something,
yeah,
that extra order dice has a lot of extra value.
Yes.
And so I do wonder if that's part of it there.
Yeah.
But moving on from there, US Shirley at this point.
No, Japan. 6 players for Japan. Only just, to be fair, not that far behind Germany and not really that far in front of USA. And then USA with 8 players. But again, with Japan and USA, they tended to finish, well, the highest frequency was 3rd out of 3 places. They certainly, you know, there was one person who was the best in their team with Japan, and there was one person who was best in their team with USA.
Yeah, so it's interesting. This really throws a spanner in the works in terms of who you're picking for your top 3 or 4 teams, 3 or 4 nations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing that I think is fairly conclusive is the Brits are an auto-include either way.
Yeah.
Every points limit.
As much as it pains me to admit, yes.
All restrictions. We've successfully proved that the Brits are a good nation of bolt action. The sky is blue.
Yeah.
Grass is green.
Yeah, yeah.
All the rest of it. Second choice, who are we going for then? And does it matter if it's a 3 or 4-man team when we're saying these choices?
I think it does matter, and I think there are certain combos of 3 nations that I wouldn't pick. So I'm not necessarily saying there's a combo I absolutely would pick, but I think there are certain combos that I wouldn't pick. I know when you, me and Alan talked about our lists beforehand, we did apply a little bit of logic to our selections. It wasn't just 3 people going away and picking the team, you know, picking the list that they were the most comfortable with. We did have a think about, well, we do need to be able to cope with certain builds, you know, and across the 3 of us, who's going to take on this particular build, for example, if we get the choice to. I think with WoW, the way it was set up this year for WoW, it did encourage you as a team to think about not just which nation you were playing, but also the kind of builds across the 3 lists that you were putting together. Because across the 3 of us, we can all play more than one nation at a reasonable level. So if we needed to pivot to a different nation, we could have done, even if we ended up, certainly for at least 2 of the 3 of us, playing the nation that we're the most comfortable or play the most frequently.
Yeah. So having said all that.
Yeah. So I didn't answer your question at all.
Which 3, if you had, so say you've got the reinforced generic player.
Yep.
Which 3 nations are you taking for this generic team?
So obviously you're taking Britain.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
I would take one of Germany, USA and Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
And I might bounce one of those to my third choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think I want to take something like Japan or Italy as one of my three. Not both Japan and Italy, but either or. Because with the new Case Blue rules with Italy, you can do regular fanatics with tough fighters plus the whole autocannon situation very, very well. If I had someone who was confident in playing Italy and had, you know, put the hours in with the new rules and the new build and the new units, I do think they are a very good choice as an alternative to a Japanese list.
Okay.
What would be a solid choice would be Brits and then let's say USA or Soviets or Germany, two of those three. That's a very, very solid, you know, any Brits is a yes, and then two out of those other three. But there's no spark there on paper. The spark's going to come from the selection, the units, and the player. There is a spark with a Japanese list or an Italian list, I think.
Yeah, I think your Brits are like your anchor. They sort of ground the whole team.
Mm-hmm.
You can put them into a fight where they can play for a draw.
Yeah. Or
like you put them up against the hardest opponent list because they can take the punch because they've got all those stubborn units, etc.
Yeah.
They can take that punch. I'm then thinking you probably want two nations that can go out and like fight for the win after that. Or you could have another nation that's really playing for the draw. And then your third nation is your loose cannon.
Yeah.
But then I think tactically what you want, you basically want to be playing for the win, I think. If you're not playing for the win, you're going to end up mid-table. So I suppose there's a mindset there. Do you just want to do reasonably well? Or are you going hell for leather, let's get the win every time? And I think if you go into an international competitive tournament, you want to be playing for the win, don't you? And so actually, take my Brits and then my other two. I think I'm going to throw the Soviets in.
Okay.
I mean, it's contingent on this one, the how well I know the player can play the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't just throw the Soviets to someone who's never played them and say, they're a good nation, off you go.
But
if I know someone who's playing Soviets well regularly,
I'm
going to tell them to bring the Soviets, I think.
Okay.
And then the third choice, it's a tough one because the rest of them are all very close to each other, really, from this choice. I mean, if we go back to the WTC, then you would be looking at Germany. But for me, you're saying there's no spark. For me, the Germans don't really have a spark. I think they're a good... Again, I think you need the person to know how to play them for the win.
Yeah.
Because I think they're a hard one because they don't have a unique selling point. You have to know how to play them for the win. And so that's going to be contingent on the player.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I'm just going for the generic, I'm probably going to throw in the Japanese, I think, as my third choice.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, they can play for the draw because they're all fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
If you just need them to go down and hide, they could do that for six turns all day long, couldn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm thinking Brits, Soviets, Japanese is my three. So I don't know what our conclusion is from all that analysis, other than Brits are not to include.
What I think it is worth pointing out, and with the WoW data, Russell didn't release individual standings, but Bo did a video on it, and he showed the individual results, but didn't give the people's names. So you did get an opportunity to see which of the nations that were played were, you know, finishing at the top and so on and so forth. Where I'm going with this is that if you look at the top 10 for WTC and you look at the top 10 for WoW, for example, individual players and the nations they played, it's not Britain, 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 Britain. Yes, they are a very, very strong competitive nation. They're not an auto win. You know, they may well be an auto include in a team context, but they are not an auto win by any accounts at all. WoW, certainly a lot of the people who finished first in their team of three were playing Brits. That is true. Wasn't necessarily the case in the WTC data across the team of four. And I think I'm making this point as someone who plays Brits a lot. And it's like, oh yeah, it's a Brits, it's an auto win. You know, stick some Gurkhas and Stuarts and so on. It's not an auto win. It's a very, very strong list, and you are going to do well at it when you know how to use it and so on. But it's not, I'll just turn up, oh, look, that person's got Dacre Stuarts and Gurkha Paras, right, game over.
Yeah, I think the summary for me, which is basically what you're, is very similar to what you're saying there, I think, is that I think if you choose from these top nations, it's going to, which ones, which specific ones you put in will come down to the specific players.
100%. Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be Brits, Germans, Japanese, Soviets, USA, Italians as well. Now they've got Case Blue. Those six nations, depending whether you're playing a 3 or 4 man tournament, I think you're basically going to play the 3 or 4 nations that your players are strongest at. Or if they're playing a particular style with a particular nation and you've got a particular sort of strategy where these two players will be sort of the stable players who are going to get a draw, possibly a win, and these two players are just going to be the high-risk, high-reward players. But ultimately, yeah, I think there's six nations to choose from, and it's going to be very dependent on the specific players.
On the player who is turning up that weekend, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's inconclusive.
Yeah, which we probably, you know, you probably could have predicted at the start of this episode, but thank you for bearing with us until this point to conclude that it's inconclusive.
I mean, the key takeaway for me, other than that, is that Germany are better than expected.
Yes, absolutely. No, I 100% actually would say that, both for WoW and for WTC. I was not expecting, on average, the Germans to appear where they did when you look at all things considered.
Well done. Someone has made Germany great again.
Well, have they made them great, or they've made them better than average?
Well, and this is the question that I had earlier. So the Brits, I think, have plateaued. We've seen all the tricks with Brits. Yeah. Everyone's tried everything that they're going to try with Brits
now. You settled on a fairly static build.
I don't think Brits as a force are going to get much better.
No.
The Germans are a little bit in flux at the minute. And I do wonder if with more time and experience and sort of like fiddling with your list, the Germans may have a little bit of room to grow.
I was just going to say, thinking about the British list at both WoW and WTC, at WTC there was one person who didn't take Gurkhas and Stuarts, and they did very, very well. Big shout out there to Matt from USA2, because he took Maoris rather than Gurkhas, and he had Chaffees rather than Stuarts. But all the other British players, including myself here, shamelessly took Gurkhas and Stuarts with some form of engineers or flamethrowers or PPA jeeps to add a little bit of fire into the mix. There's not a huge variety at the top end in terms of British competitive builds, unless you go out on a limb.
Well, even, I think the only variety seen British lists these days in the competitive tournaments is the armoured car choice, because everyone has their favourite armoured car.
Yeah.
And it doesn't affect the rest of the list that heavily.
Yeah.
And so it's like, do you want more order dice and you lean towards bikes? Do you want more armour and you go towards something like the Marmon Harrington? Or do you want something that's a bit counter-offensive and take the PPA Jeep?
Yeah.
But other than that, it's a fairly established list now.
Yeah, you get the odd LVT appearing, which we saw at the WoW, didn't we? Because you had a few more points available. It's a nice little gun truck there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that at Beachhead as well.
We did. Yeah, we did see that.
But in a very different fashion.
In a Russian doll fashion. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. One thing I did just want to sort of bring all this together. Playing in both events and looking at the info and talking to players who were at the events but also who didn't go and asked us how it was, I'm really excited for team events, and I would love to see more team events that aren't just WoW or WTC and aren't sort of the most competitive players from across the world. The scope to have, you know, national or events, team events on a national level is there. It does take a bit of organizing in terms of the venue and having enough tables and that kind of thing, but when you get something like WoW, where you've got to think about the pairings and the matchups and what your three lists or four lists look like, or where you get something like WTC with the opposite, where it's like, okay, it's random matchups, you've got no idea who you're going to be playing, and you need to think about that when you build your list, because you could end up going up against something that if you lean too much one way, you're going to get absolutely steamrolled if that 1 in 4 chance of hitting that list that you don't want comes up. I really like the team format, and I would love to see more of that going on at a non-international level.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we could do with more team formats. And my one thought on WoW and WTC is I do really like when the team has some agency in the pairings.
Yeah.
So getting to choose your opponent. I do think if at WTC we'd been able to choose our pairings, because we're all on the same table, that would have been just the right amount. And I actually think at WoW it would be fun to do the opposite, where you get to choose your table, but you don't get,
you don't get to choose your pairings.
So the captains put the three lists on the three tables.
Yeah.
And then basically you're coming up against the other army that wanted that table as well.
Yeah, so you're sort of face down list on the table that you want that list to play on. And vice versa for the opponent's captain. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways of doing it, which is really exciting.
And I think that would be really fun as well, because I imagine you'd get the bluff as well, where someone bluffs they're going to put their trucks on the town board with lots of roads, and then it actually ends up on the different one
because they
knew that you were going to put your trucks on that one,
and they've countered it with the list they've chosen for that table. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then we end up with both truck lists in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
And I do think that, I don't think we need the full agency of picking your list and picking your table.
No.
But I think you do need one of them.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we talked about the differences between the two events. The fact that you knew at WoW who you were going to play on day one, because the pools were predetermined and seeded, you know, and it was actually interesting when they seeded it prior to creating the pools. And there were some, you know, it didn't completely go in line with the seeds, but there was a fairly decent correlation between pre-tournament seeding and second day matchups. There were a few people that finished higher than expected and so on.
And that was fun, because that was like a classic sporting upset where the underdog beats the team who thought they were just going to walk it.
It was like the group stages of a World Cup, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think the groups is a good way to do it. I wouldn't like to see it at every tournament.
Yeah.
But I think for this specific one, it gives it a nice, unique flavour.
One thing, if you go the other way, so like your Swiss pairings, like we saw at WTC, if your team's done on Swiss pairings, and then your matchups within each round are done on Swiss within the four players per team, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
It stops you doing that thing where you throw your least experienced player under the bus against their most experienced player, because we weren't sure who could beat them. And then we'll just take our chances with the other three.
Or like we had this year, which was you could play anybody, you know, you had no idea who you were playing because it was face down pairings. Yeah. There's, in summary, there's loads of different ways of slicing it, which is what makes team events, was one of the reasons that I find team events really interesting.
Yeah, and I think three is enough. So with you saying it's difficult to run them because of the number of tables, etc. I think a three-person team actually creates enough choices that it does make it feel like a real team event, where you're having to sort of think strategically as a team rather than just as individuals. Whereas doubles, I think sometimes less so.
Do you know what would be really interesting is if you, I am thinking on my feet here or thinking on my chair, if you said, right, you've got to choose three nations, and you have to choose from this pot of nations for your first choice, this pot of nations for your second choice, and this pot of nations for your third choice.
Yeah.
So you had to make some interest. So the event organizers put it together so that you had certain nations sat in that pot one and you couldn't take both of them.
So I presume, reading between the lines here, you're going to seed the nations. And so the best nations are going to be in one pot. So your Brits, Soviets, Japanese, US, let's say, are pot one. Pot two might be Germany, Italy, Finns, Chinese. Like, are you going to seed your nations, or are you going? Or because otherwise, I think if you keep those strong nations apart, we're just
no. So, I am literally thinking about this as I talk. I'm not suggesting that you put the four strongest nations in the same pot and you can only pick one, because I think that's too restrictive. But you might make an either or choice. So your choice one is either or, and you put two traditionally, you know, perceived strong nations together. Right, go and work that one out, captain. And then you might put two or three together in your second pot, and then you might then have anything you want from what's left in your third. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually quite like the idea that you can only take one of the top nations and then one of the second. And I think if I was doing it like that, I think the top group for me would be Brits, Soviets, Japanese, pick one. And then it would be US, Germans, Italians, pick one. And then the minor ones, I think I'd have to look at how they've done historically over tournaments. I think that's a really interesting choice. If you can only have one of Brits, Soviets, or Japanese,
Yeah. I was being a little bit cautious because I'm thinking about players and how many armies they've got and the availability they might have to play certain armies and so on. You make it too restrictive and you start, you either create a situation where a good player is taking a nation they're not familiar with or as familiar with because they've been chosen on the basis of they are a good player, but they're having to play a nation that they're not as familiar with. Or they may just not have access to that nation because they haven't, that army, because they don't own it. And it's a lot of money, time, and resource to buy it, paint it, play it, get ready for that next big event.
Yeah. But again, that's part of building your team, isn't it? Where you are looking at who has what and who's happy to play what, because we can lend each other armies.
And who plays well as that nation. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many different options. Whoever said bolt action was getting stale, just create a team event and muck around with the restrictions. There you go.
Yep. We'll see you there. So if you're heading to a competitive tournament, hopefully that's been useful. If you are aiming to go all out and play for the win, otherwise, I hope it's been entertaining.
If you were hoping for detailed, high-level statistical analysis, we're really sorry that didn't happen.
Please do share, like, and subscribe. And it's ta-ta for now from me.
And it's ta-ta for now from him.
Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.